Our tagline is what maybe we are most particularly proud of. It is the following words: taking responsibility for America's health. Now, how, you might ask, could we adopt such an audacious and perhaps presumptuous tagline? And the answer is, it goes directly to the essence of our model and who we are. When organizations, such as my members, are prospectively paid for a population, they become responsible for the cost and quality. They are stewards of that cost and quality. No longer is there a profit in waste. There's a profit actually in the elimination of waste.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for listening to Pop Health Podcast. This is Gavin Ward, co-host of Pop Health Podcast. In today's show, we sit down with returning guest Don Crane, president of the newly known America's Physician Groups, which was formerly known as CAPG. America's Physician Groups represents IPAs and other physician groups that practice capitated care, also referred to regularly as managed care. And Don will talk about some of the work that they're doing nationally, including a recent trip to the White House, where he's speaking on the benefits of some of the work of his organizations and the benefits of capitated care. Zach and I really enjoyed sitting down with Don, getting to know him a little bit better, and of course, talking about the conference that they do annually as well. We hope you enjoy today's show. Feel free to check us out on Stitcher or iTunes for additional episodes, and please leave a review with any feedback that you have. Thanks, everyone, and enjoy the show. So, Don, similar to the last episode we did with you last year, can you tell the audience something about you outside of the workplace? Maybe a fun fact, something folks may not know.
Okay. Well, when we last did this, I talked a little bit about my two Great Danes, and now they're pretty well known around at least my small little healthcare world, and that produced some laughs around here. I guess what I would add, kind of keeping with the animal theme, is that in terms of a fun but unimportant fact, Gray Cat, we've now named Gray Kitty, decided to adopt the Crane household. It's a feral cat, and I've learned that if you start to feed a feral cat, it owns you, and you own it. So Dallas and Ace now have a little sister named Gray Kitty. There's the fun fact.
Do they get along?
It's, yeah, it's pretty interesting to see. So there will be Dallas, who's probably 165 pounds, and Ace, who's probably 135 pounds, and Gray Kitty, somewhere in between about 5 and 6 pounds, and they'll all be lying on the floor together, and Gray Kitty likes the warmth coming off the dog, so it's quite a scene.
Nice. Fun fact about dogs, my mom just lost her dog in a rainstorm. He escaped outside their backyard. Mm-hmm. She put up flyers, and 2 weeks later, someone called.
Love it.
And I never heard a success story about it.
That's great.
About the flyers. So
that's great.
Quick side note there. So we had Don on last year when Don was leading CAPG. Now, as Don's going to share, the name and brand has changed. So before we get into that, Don, can you remind the audience a little bit about the history of what was formerly known as CAPG and then now the new rebranding, which you'll share as well?
Sure. So CAPG has been in existence for many years, 18, 20 or so years, and had some predecessor organizations, CAPO, and before it. But so during that period of time, starting in the early 2000s, we were strictly California-based, composed, as we are now, of groups dedicated to coordinated care. Then virtually all of them were capitated, at least to a significant percent of their revenue.
And can you remind our audience, what does capitated mean?
Capitated, thank you for that. So sure. Capitated is when an organization of physicians, typically a group or an IPA, are prepaid or prospectively paid a defined amount of money to cover a defined population for a defined period of time. So it creates a very budget-like environment for the group to operate in. If they are able to deliver the care and keep the population healthy, maybe, just maybe, they'll make a profit. And if they can't keep the population healthy, maybe they'll enjoy a loss. So it aligns incentives in a very important way in that fashion.
Great. Thank you.
Good. So moving forward in time here, and I guess I'll start to talk about our rebranding, which is really exciting for this organization. So several years ago, approximately 3 or 4 years ago, we decided that in order to make our advocacy more effective, we needed to formally become national. Okay, so we had been lobbying and advocating in Washington, D.C. for a very long time, but it became apparent to us to truly influence Medicare, Medicaid, and other federal issues. We needed to be there and we needed to be impactful. And the way to do that is to have a large national footprint, right? So if you're doing it from a single state, you have a small amount of clout. But if you represent lots of states, you have more effectiveness. And so the idea was to open our doors to groups from all around the country, which we did. And they, in short order, have been joining. I'll use the old name, CAPCHI. And they've been joining at a rapid clip. We're now approximately 300 organizations strong, up from where we were before when we were solely California-based. I think we were 180 or so. So we're, you know, growing fast. A large footprint across the country, groups that all are dedicated to coordinated care and risk-based contracting. So some of those that have been CAPCHI members for a long time might have all of their revenue in prospective payment or capitation, as it's also called. But many of the newcomers are new to the risk contracting business. So we have ACOs, and we have next-gen ACOs, and we have groups that have some experience and some with very little experience in capitation, but all see it as the destination and the goal, frankly, because with it comes better care and lower cost. And so that's what distinguishes this organization from others. So now, before I get into trouble and use our old name too much further, I should, if I may, I'll Please. Tell you a little about our rebranding.
Absolutely.
Our new name now is America's Physician Groups, okay? This we did on January 10th with a press release and a big launch, and we're continuing that process, and there'll be a splashy presentation on it at our upcoming annual conference, which I can talk about. But we changed the name, and that is the name. It's also known now to some as APG or APG, and we're all trying to figure out, you know, what's best to call ourselves. But it's definitely America's Physician Group. So that is who we are. It's very self-evident from the name. We are about physician groups. We are not comprised of health plans or hospitals or individual physicians. We are physician groups, and we are America's, as in national. But it's also the possessive of America's, as in apostrophe S. This country owns these groups, and these groups are dedicated to bringing basically lower cost, higher quality, and better service to the entire country. Our tagline is what maybe we are most particularly proud of. It is the following words: taking responsibility for America's health. Now, how, you might ask, could we adopt such an audacious and perhaps presumptuous tagline? And the answer is it goes directly to the essence of our model and who we are. When organizations, such as my members, are prospectively paid for a population, they become responsible for the cost and quality. They are stewards of that cost and quality. No longer is there a profit in waste. There's a profit actually in the elimination of waste. So therein lies the responsibility. Somebody's got to step up and do it. It hasn't really been done in America. We have many friends and stakeholders and trading partners that play an important role, but no one plays a role so central to reforming American healthcare as physician groups, and in particular, now America's Physician Groups.
So how many states do you have members
in? 44 states, okay. District of Columbia, and Puerto Rico. It's either 44 or 45. It's hard to keep track because the numbers are moving so fast.
Yeah.
There's a few states that don't have like many physician groups in there, so it's kind of hard to claim Wyoming and you know, a few states like that. But we'll get there. We'll get to all 50.
Yeah. Yeah. And so why do these groups join America's Physicians Groups?
Well, they want advocacy. They want their business model well represented. They also want to learn through our advocacy about regulations and the like that are coming down the pike that are going to influence their business. So there's the whole advocacy piece. Next, they want education. We all have a lot to learn, even those that have been doing this kind of practice for a long time. So the sharing intramurally of best practices is central to what we do. So we hold innumerable meetings where our members help one another with the details of how to deliver coordinated care in a prospectively paid environment. And we're able to do that because so many of our members are in different geographies. So the groups in San Francisco are not competing with the groups in Miami and are therefore highly inclined to help one another. So central to our ethos is helping one another. But beyond that now, as we've moved national, we also feel it is part of our mission to help export the know-how that our members inside and outside of California have to those groups that want to move into risk-based contracting because they see it as a way to deliver better care and as a way also to comply with MACRA and other laws that we'll talk about in a minute and define. The third and final thing that people join now APG for is really to enjoy being a part of the leadership of the transformation of American healthcare. So clearly we think of ourselves as leaders, as being in the vanguard of this change and pretty much the tip of the spear in the movement from volume to value that you've been hearing about.
I know off mic, Don, you're talking about how APG is leading the transformation of America's healthcare. And so Don actually spends is about half your time in D.C.?
Nearly half or two-thirds of my time. Well, approximately half my time is in D.C. now. We have a staff there, four FTEs at the moment, growing rapidly. So we're finding lots of opportunity and lots of success in Washington, D.C.
Great. So tell us briefly about the structure, the staff structure.
Well, I'll start with locations. So we have our offices in Sacramento, where we continue to advocate on behalf of our large California membership contingent. We have our offices in Los Angeles, and now our offices in Washington, D.C. We also have, you know, in a very virtual way, we have one employee in San Antonio, Texas, and of course, innumerable contractors around. So we, like many other sort of modern organizations, are finding ourselves very virtual, right?
Yeah.
So that's where we are sort of physically, otherwise organizationally. We're lucky to have just a bunch of good people with a lot of advanced degrees working for us. Two MDs, I don't know how many masters in public health or masters in business administration, a handful of those. We just have this incredibly talented and smart staff doing the work of this organization.
The members that you have, about 300, so they contribute dues that help support the organization. And then how else do you generate revenue to support APG?
Well, we are principally a dues-based organization. Okay. So incidentally, you would use that word, we do enjoy some revenue from our consulting arm. So we have a cohort of consultants, former board members and retired CEOs, a very potent cohort of ladies and gentlemen that know a lot about coordinated care. And so in a kind of a bureau way, we make them available. And so there's a little revenue from that and a little revenue from some of our other activities, quite a lot of revenue and hopefully net profits, I might add, from our conferences. So our large annual conference, which this year is in San Diego on April 19, 20, and 21. You're cordially invited, as are all your listeners. And our other conference, our colloquium, which is in Washington, D.C. in October, and the exact date escapes me. I'm looking over my shoulder.
The 10th to the 12th.
There I see it's October 10, 11, 12. Yeah. Thank you for that, Zach. So we enjoy some revenue from those conferences as well.
Is a colloquium, as it pertains to your group, is that more of a policy discussion, or what is that as opposed to your annual conference?
So, of course, both very similar in a lot of ways, but some difference. So with the colloquium, it's a little more policy oriented. We know that the policymakers of Washington, D.C. are either attending that conference or listening to it, or in some cases, speaking at it. So we're a little more interested in making direct kind of communications to that city and the healthcare community there. So we'll have more in the way of senators and congressmen invited as speakers because it's convenient for them. So it's got more of a policy bent. But given our ethos and our DNA and our interest in exporting the know-how of coordinated care, we have a lot of sessions that are also the how to deliver that care.
Yeah.
So
you said that your membership is ramping up very quickly. Do you find that just as much as your know-how and ability to help these groups exist in this new environment, that your proximity to Washington and some of the decision makers there also plays into your rapid growth?
Well, sure, because people can readily see the kind of influence we're having in Washington, D.C. Right. So we've got some exciting initiatives going on there that we report out to our members and those organizations that we seek to recruit. And they can tell that this is an organization they want to be a part of.
Actually, just on that note, we were talking offline a little bit. Last time that we spoke with you, you were talking about some of the efforts you're making on the actual healthcare reform as it pertained to alternative payment models. We were talking a little bit just now that you have some updates on that and some exciting things. Do you mind telling the audience a little bit about some of the programs that you've been working on?
Sure. So we're engaged basically across the whole kind of continuum of activities there in Washington, D.C. that pertain to healthcare. But in answer to your question, we're pretty pleased with some of the initiatives that we're having particular success with. And so up high on the list, I would mention the Medicare Advantage APMs that are described in a regulation that was just issued, in which CMS has expressed an intent to do something that we've been urging upon CMS. So now hang with me while I get into some acronyms in the weeds just a little bit, but there is the very familiar, I think, Medicare Advantage program that many of our members enjoy, because it is, to a large extent, I'll call it a capitated program, certainly in California. So it's an excellent program that's growing and really does a good job of showcasing the excellent coordinated care our members deliver. And there it sits. And in comes in about 2015, the MACRA law, the Medicare and CHIP Reauthorization Act, known as MACRA, best known at least initially for repealing a goofy formula by which the government increased or decreased the Medicare fee schedule. Very technical, very right. Weeds-like, but that was its kind of calling card.
Anybody would like more information, they can listen to our podcast with Dr. Ashby Wolf. We actually talked with her right after MACRA was launching, and she went over some of the more technical aspects. So
she can describe the SGR formula good. Yes. Please listen to Ashby. I wish I couldn't carry her briefcase on that subject. But within that law was also the creation of these two new pathways for physicians in Medicare to get paid in the future. One, the MIPS pathway, the Merit Incentive Payment System, and then secondly, the APM or Alternative Payment Model pathway, right? Two pathways. So the Alternative Payment Model pathway allows groups that qualify to get a 5% bonus across all of their original Medicare population, right? So this is where they can get their bonuses and increases in compensation. The MACRA program, on the one hand, and the Medicare Advantage program, on the other hand, that I've described, have been in silos and have been separate until now, as we have urged CMS to effectively connect them by recognizing the good coordinated care work done in the Medicare Advantage program by my members and similar groups, and allow them to qualify as quote-unquote APMs or alternative payment models under the MACRA program so that they can enjoy the benefits, the incentive payments there. So it spells more money for my members, which is a good thing, but better yet, it promotes a successful mode of practice, and it promotes a very successful program called Medicare Advantage. It just harmonizes and makes better sense out of two different Medicare programs that were operating in silos. It didn't make sense to us. So CMS is in this latest regulation it issues to indicate, yes, APG, we're going to launch a pilot project to test your idea. And so we've worked closely with them, and it's going to happen. Yeah. It'll happen in this year, I think, 2018. And we're all excited about that. So big victory, but also I think a good forward step for healthcare. That's certainly one exciting thing I would mention. There are other large and small things. I mean, next week I've been invited by Jared Kushner and Seema Verma to go to the White House and talk about the interoperability of electronic health records. So that kind of thing is happening all the time.
Which
to
I'm
us.
Sure is music to the ears of a lot of our listeners, because that's something that comes up all the time, is that the EHRs all don't talk to each other.
So with a little luck, we'll fix that next Thursday, I say facetiously. But anyway, we get exciting little successes like that. Another one I'll mention, and this too runs the risk of being too detailed to try and verbalize, but I'll try. So there's the what's known as the original Medicare program. Maybe two-thirds of the seniors are in. And then there's the Medicare Advantage program, where approximately the third of the seniors are in. That represents most of Medicare, right? We have urged now on Congress to pass a law, as we've urged also on CMS to launch demonstration projects, to create a third program that sort of sits between these two, drawing the best features of each. We've entitled it the third option. It's been now described in legislation. I think it's yet another version is being drafted as we speak now. A lot of policy wonks are picking up on it. Voices everywhere are basically saying this should be done. And that should be done is direct contracts from physician groups, from CMS to physician groups, so direct contracting, important words, capitated basis, very important, and allowing seniors to stay within network should they choose, or go out of network if they choose. There's that freedom, but it creates a differential benefit design so that if they go outside a network, they might pay a copayment, which incents them to stay in network. I know I'm getting into technical weeds, but these benefit designs are critically important in producing great results.
Yeah.
The original Medicare program produces what we think are poor results because seniors can go anywhere. It's very hard to manage their quality, impossible to manage their cost. So this new sort of third option, we think, basically combines the best of both and perhaps should be best labeled ACOs done right. So you've heard the term, the acronym ACOs, Accountable Care Organizations, and they were a feature of the Affordable Care Act. And they have been launched by Medicare, and they are, you know, succeeding, but not hugely.
Right.
Because their design, their benefit design particularly, but their design is imperfect in our view. Our answer to that is the third option, which we think makes perfect ACOs. So ACOs done right is another way to think about it. And with all of that narrative, I will just tell you that it is picking up traction, and I think one of these days, pretty soon, we'll see that launched in the form of a demonstration.
Yeah. I mean, I was staying with you on that. It sounds definitely interesting to be able to draw from both. I do want to ask, capitation is something that you've talked about a lot today and something that we've discussed a lot on the program. We have the unique opportunity to talk to people about it from different views. And so capitation and its success or failures means different things to a lot of different people. You're obviously a big believer in capitation. You've talked about driving quality and cost savings. From a physician's angle or physician's group angle, what is it about capitation beyond just collaboration, maybe just diving into it a little bit more than collaboration, that really makes it the most viable option in your eyes?
So I'll try and be brief. And I'll hit the nail on the head if I can. The alternative that we've been living under, the fee-for-service model, creates an environment we have likened to a hamster wheel.
Yeah.
So for a physician to make more money, he's got to do more, work Saturday, run on that wheel faster, longer, harder. And that's no fun for physicians. So from the physician perspective, to move into a capitated world, all of a sudden, incentives get aligned, and the goal of the physician is to cause his patients to be healthier, which is precisely what they went to medical school for. And yet at the same time, earn a good living and, you know, by our arithmetic, probably actually more money, frankly.
Sure.
So that's from the physician perspective. You know, from the societal perspective, all of a sudden, you eliminate waste, which makes the care more affordable. You improve the quality, which is obviously patently a good idea.
Yeah.
So depending upon, you know, whose hat you have on, you can look at capitation in different ways. But from every angle, it's a superior model.
Yeah. And in some of the new ideas that you have been a part of, does it allow for more modern flexibility for physicians being able to, I know frustrations we've heard are like, not being able to bill for text conversation with a patient or being able to do video visits? Or does it start to modernize the way that physicians can treat their patients a little more?
Absolutely, yes. Great question. So in the fee-for-service world, you're pretty much obliged to treat your patient in the way that a fee schedule describes. You know, if you do something that is described in the fee schedule, you get paid. If you do something that's not described in the fee schedule, you don't get paid, even though that thing may be very necessary. So you flip to a capitated system. All of a sudden, physicians and groups can deploy that money where it most makes sense. So, for example, let's suppose they have homebound seniors that can't get to the office. They can pay for Uber or Lyft. They can pay for the transportation so that senior doesn't stay homebound, go without prescriptions, and whose condition will worsen and worsen. No physician in a fee-for-service world would dream of paying for Lyft and Uber to transport all of his or her patients.
Right.
But in a capitated world, that's increasingly the case. And it's a good example. You would use nurses where you wouldn't otherwise, you know, social workers where you wouldn't otherwise, pharmacists where you wouldn't otherwise.
Yeah.
You would do analytics. You would do all the things that we do to improve the health of the individual and the health of a population that you wouldn't dream of doing in a fee-for-service world. So much more flexibility.
Sure, sure. Well, just kind of moving on from a little bit of that, and we've talked about these things in the past. And when we had you on last time, the administration had just changed over. So it was a little bit more speculative. Now that we are just over a year in and healthcare has started to take a different shape or at least head down a different path. And I know you're going to the White House next week, so I won't ask you anything like that. But have there been major changes from working with the previous administration to this administration besides the actual personnel changeover maybe?
So in answer to the question, have there been major changes, I'd say the answer is no. Now, there's been clearly a huge amount in terms of repeal and replace. And, of course, that hasn't gone very far. And there's other things, you know, the repeal of the individual mandate. I shouldn't make light of those changes. But I interpret your question to be changes that affect, you know, what APG is interested in and what we do in our business model. And I'm happy to tell you, there have not been great changes, certainly not untoward ones. In point of fact, we're relieved to say that the administration has continued all of the work of MACRA. We now have a new Secretary of HHS, Alex Azar, who at least in his testimony and the confirmation hearings has made it clear he's going to continue to support, I think, double down on value-based arrangements.
Yeah.
So the value movement, in spite of the administration change of HHS secretary from Tom Price to Alex Azar, et cetera, continues very strongly in terms of Washington, D.C. policy. And I'll add that it continues very strongly in terms of market demand. I mean, the payer and employer community wants to see the movement to value succeed. They want more value for their premium dollar.
Yeah. And just before we move on from this, you actually briefly touched on the individual mandate. You obviously represent physician groups. How has the elimination of that, or prospectively, how does the elimination of the individual mandate affect those groups?
Well, of course, we haven't seen much of it yet because it's just happened. So I need to now sort of look into a crystal ball when we look at it prospectively. And maybe the short answer is, I don't know. I'm a soothsayer only up to a point. I think consensus view among those cognoscenti that know how it's apt to affect insurance markets is that it'll probably increase the amount of uninsured. It will also destabilize the risk pools that underlie the exchanges. So remember, we're talking individual market on this now, which is, I think, only 11% of the population, some relatively small percentage, not insignificant, but small. You know, the notion is that without a mandate to acquire insurance, those that are healthy won't do so and thus join the risk pool. Those that are unhealthy will do so because they need to do so. And so all of a sudden, the acuity, fancy word for, you know, the profile of the population in the pool will get, quote unquote, sicker and sicker. And therefore, the premiums will rise higher and higher, which will increase the affordability problem, and then fewer yet people will be insured. So you see the confluence of these factors creating more and more uninsured. Uninsured individuals don't go see physicians for care.
Right. Yeah.
So this is where, yes, looking out, you know, a year or three from now, one could imagine my groups seeing fewer patients and having more uninsured people in their community. They then go into emergency rooms where the cost is higher and the hospitals have to charge right. more, and it destabilizes it. I mean, a ripple effects aplenty would be my prospective answer.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thanks, Don. As we close out the show, wanted to learn really quickly from you. How do folks join? So you're in 44, 45 states. Let's say I'm in a state and I want to be your first member. How would I go about that?
Well, contact us. We have a website, apg.org. All of our contact information is there. So too is our membership application. I would assume you'd want to have some conversations before you actually join. So it would be call us and we'll meet and talk and so forth. But our application is there, and then the application needs to be prepared and filled out and submitted, and you got to qualify. So you're going to need to be a physician group that's dedicated to risk-based contracting and coordinated care. And if you're that and otherwise qualify, you'll get to become a member and enjoy the benefits of working with a lot of really smart and good people that are devoted to making healthcare better in the United States.
Great. Are you able to share who some of your partners are?
Partners as in some of who are members, my members?
Sure.
Well, you know, I've got 300 great ones, and I love them all equally. But we proudly feature a lot of really great groups. I mean, some of the best in the nation for sure. I mean, off the top of my head, thinking about California, Sharp, Reece, Steele, Healthcare Partners, Brown and Tolan, Hill okay. Physicians, it goes on and on.
Yeah.
Outside of California, they keep joining, and these groups are impressive and, in many cases, more sophisticated than California groups, frankly. So New West Physicians and WellMed in Texas. And then maybe my favorite, I hope they're listening to this, our newest member, I think their application has hit the desk, is Steward, a system whose offices are headquartered in Boston but have physician group and a network wrapped around it and wrapped around some 35 hospitals in 10 states. Almost all of their business is globally capitated. Just very sophisticated. They were one of the pioneer ACOs. Very successful, very sophisticated, very efficient, doing a superb job. And they have joined CAPG, and to quote them, they looked at every other association available in the United States and they said none of them were a fit for us. We want to join CAPG because of your DNA. You are us and we are you. And that's what they told me about a week and a half ago. So I'm happy to invite Stuart into our membership.
Great. So when they were first talking to you, you were known as CAPG.
Yep.
But now they're joining
APG, America's Physician Group.
And it awesome. Was the website was apg.org?
.org. Yes.
And if people accidentally go to the old CAPG, assuming it'll be forwarded right to APG.
Yeah, that assumption is correct.
Okay, very good. Well, great. I actually know we work with some Stuart hospitals in Arizona. I believe they have a presence in Arizona.
I think they do.
Yeah, very good. All right. Well, as we close up the show, last opportunity here, talk briefly about the upcoming conference here in April.
Okay. So we are going to have a tour de force annual conference. Program is strong, strong, strong. We have excellent plenary session speakers from Elizabeth Rosenthal from the Kaiser Family Foundation and Robbie Pearl, former executive medical director of the Permanente North, as we call it in California, TPMG. Superb speakers go on and on. A host of breakout sessions where physicians and groups can learn how to do coordinated care. I think, though, in addition to the program, which is strong and will be, I think, really a help to everyone, it's largely the atmosphere, which is electric and thick with the sort of excitement of change that draws people to our conference. Fantastic networking opportunity to talk to and rub elbows with others that are trying to do this model and get better and succeed in this risk-based model.
Yeah, and the location is great. Don, you were nice enough to invite us last year. I attended, but San Diego is always a fun place for us to visit and a great location. So I personally would encourage you folks as well to check it out. Don Crane has been our guest, formerly the leader of CAPG, now
America's Physician Groups.
Very good. Well, thanks, folks, for listening. Zach, thanks for joining as well.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Don.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Take care.